This episode of the Hard Drive DL is brought to you by our friends at Napa Auto Parts. Conquer the job with Napa know-how.
You're listening to Hard Drive DL, available at harddriveradio.com or download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app.
Hey everyone, welcome to Hard Drive DL, the Hard Drive Radio podcast. My name is Paulie Walnuts, and I'm so glad you've decided to join us for this very special episode. We have Robert and Dean DeLeo of Stone Temple Pilots sitting down with Roxy to talk about the 25th anniversary re-release of their debut album, Core. Album came out back in 1992. And if you're around for that, like me, and you suddenly feel old, you're in good company. Anyway, let's get started.
Hey, I'm really pleased and proud to be joined right now by my friends Dean and Robert DeLeo of Stone Temple Pilots. How are you, gentlemen?
Great, great, Roxy. Thanks for having us.
Well, congratulations on this amazing 25th anniversary set of Core. You know, it's funny. Does it feel like 25 years ago that record was released?
It surely does not. It surely does not. It's that old adage, you know, time flies when you're having fun. You know, those memories of making this, just it feels like last week, you know.
You know, I often wonder, you know, thinking back on all that time, you know, what do you remember about the day of that release? I mean, did you guys, you know, go anywhere? Was there a special concert? Was there anything special you did that day?
You know, we were talking to Brendan O'Brien recently, and he was bringing up some things that I kind of forgot about. And one of those things, you know, you got to think where we were back then. He mentioned that he treated us all to the Red Lobster.
Yeah, and let me tell you, we saw that as being extra fancy, and like he, you know, the Red Lobster. We were living large,
and he said, "It's on me."
Well, in the realm of his career, I mean, what had he produced before this with you guys? Do you know? Do you remember?
There was a thing he did called The Four Horsemen that, I don't know, didn't remember much. Raging Slab, I think he did just before us. And I think he just finished, not sure, but I know there was Raging Slab and The Four Horsemen. And
yeah, that's kind of what we were going off of sonically. We wanted, you know, someone not to really come in and produce with their ego or their, you know, it was Brendan O'Brien is a genuine producer. He takes what you have and enhances what you have, you know what I mean? And that's really what we wanted, someone who could
kind of like ecstasy.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, yeah,
I love it.
But we weren't running around kissing everyone though at the time.
Soft shoulder rubs.
Oh my God. Well, I mean, going through all the old material, you know, I mean, you found, I guess, a bunch of demos and some, you know, rare stuff, but what was it like going through all that stuff?
Oh, it was amazing. I went into my garage and pulled out tubs of stuff that I had, you know, stacks and stacks of cassettes, and some of those cassettes are actually from my first cassette player that I got when I was 10 years old. So I had not only going through Core, but going through, you know, me sitting around in the mid 70s, you know, trying to record songs off of Cousin Brucey, you know, AM radio.
So what were some of the songs? Do you remember
some of the songs?
Yeah.
I was really into I'd wait around for Fox on the Run by Sweet to come on. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
wow. I remember hearing AM radio. Remember the radio that was in Mom's room?
Yeah.
It was under her night table there.
Yeah.
I remember going there and just waiting. I couldn't wait to hear Cisco Kid by War.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, that is really cool. Yeah.
And Moonlight Feels Right.
Oh, now we're talking.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was another one.
Moonlight
Feels Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I see how you went from that to writing Dead and Bloated. No.
Yeah. Well, you know, you get older and you experience more things in life, especially when you move across the country and you're starving and trying to pay the rent. And
meet a guy like Mr. Weiland.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was it like, you know, because you guys left Jersey, right, and moved to California
yes.
to become, you know, professional kind of musicians like there. What was that like, you know, starting out?
When I moved out in 84, I graduated high school, so I moved out there when I was 18. And, you know, I wasn't really planning on doing music, really. I went out there to go to art school, actually, and that was my main intention. Along the way, that plan didn't work out, and I wound up, you know, sleeping on people's sofas and sleeping in my car. I bought a 1976 VW Rabbit for $650, and I'd go about 10 miles and then have to get out and fill up the radiator and then go another 10 miles. And, you know, it was part of surviving. You know, I think really when you listen to Core, there's a lot of that survival in there. And Scott was in the same position. We were all in the same position. You know, we were trying to just survive and make ends meet. I was working at a guitar shop and making $4.65, you know, an hour. And it surely wasn't cutting it. So, I think a lot of that went into Core.
Yeah, you know, Scott was 22. Writing those lyrics on that record, 22 years old, so there was big question marks for him, you know, that he was faced with you know, past, present, and future, you know, and it's pretty remarkable when you think of his age, what he was coming up with.
Oh,
yeah.
You know, I let's rewind a little bit. So Robert, you go out there and you work in a guitar shop. So is that how you met Scott? And is that how Mighty Joe Young got together?
I met Scott at a concert down in Long Beach. I used to live in Long Beach, and there was a place down there called Fender's Ballroom, and it was a kind of a punk rock thing. I growing up in New Jersey, I knew of punk rock. I mean, I remember a couple of girls playing, you know, the Ramones when I was in grade school, and you know, that was kind of my introduction to that. But there was a lot I learned about moving to California and the California punk scene, and you know, those kind of bands. And there was a place, like I said, called Fender's Ballroom down in Long Beach, and Scott and I had met down there, and you know, that's kind of where it went from there. You know. We kind of shared similar aspirations, I guess you could say.
And then when did Dean come on board? Because he wasn't there right away.
Well, what was the company? You guys had like a demo thing going on. Do you remember what that was with, Robert? That demo you guys had going, where you asked me to play the solos on?
Well, it was Mighty Joe Young demos. I mean, it was.
It was prior to that. It was prior to that when, like, basically Corey, they asked me to come up and play some solos on a thing. They had what was it called? Savage Records or something? Like little deal, like a demo deal you guys had.
Yes.
So.
But like Piece of Pie was on that.
Yeah, Piece of Pie. That was what I played on.
Yes, it was.
It was kind of an amalgamation of what you hear on Core. It had other elements to it, but the foundation was there. And I came up and played three solos, I believe. And I think it was kind of evident to Scott then how he kind of, you know, saw the direction of the band he wanted to see it go in, should we say, and kind of where everybody was feeling. And you know, sadly, the moral of the story here is I took somebody's gig. Corey Hickok, who was a very dear friend of ours, one of Scott's best friends, was the guitarist in the band, and sadly, Scott had to break this terrible news to Corey that I think we're going to have Dean be in the band. So that's kind of where it started. I went up and played on a couple demos, and then we put it together. And the first night we played, we got together at a rehearsal room. Kret seems to think the room was called Hall of Music or something like that.
Hall of Crap.
Hall of Germs.
The Hall of Germs.
So we got together because I was living in San Diego. These guys were in L.A., and we met in Orange County somewhere. I think actually Orange. And
Anaheim.
It was Anaheim. The first night we got together, we carved out Where the River Goes and the Piece of Pie that you now hear on the record.
Well, Dean was kind of the missing piece, because when he got in the band, it was like the four of us got together, and Dean actually came in with Where the River Goes, and it was like, oh, yeah, This is what it should be. This is what it can be.
So when did the name change to Stone Temple Pilots?
Oh, my gosh. Are you ready for this? So we were in love with the name Mighty Joe Young. We absolutely loved it. And the record was set to be released in July. We had a slated July release for Core. Well, we were in our artist studio looking at all the artwork. And if you can imagine seeing all the artwork in big poster size, high def photos, and we were so thrilled. The record was done, mixed, mastered. We're finalizing the final artwork. And everywhere you see Stone Temple Pilots, it says Mighty Joe Young. Well, right then and there, somebody hands me the phone and says, "It's your lawyer." And our lawyer says, "You have to change the name of the band. There's a blues artist out of Chicago that's been making records before you were born."
That was a good...
That was pretty good.
That was a really good...
And these guys look at me, and I'm there on the phone, and everybody's still, you know, got this, like, their glee boots on, you know? And I hang up the phone. I'm like, "You're not going to believe this. We got to change the name of the band."
Oh, my God.
And we were all just... crushed. So that's what kept the album from coming out until it came out September 29th, because we racked our brains and lost a lot of sleep over choosing a new name for the band.
Wow. So who ultimately came up with the name?
Well, we all kind of did. We started throwing around. Scott and I were living together at the time. And what I kind of spawned, I said, "Hey, you know, when I was a kid growing up, like, the coolest sticker to have, like, we'd put on the bottom of our skateboard or on a banana seat, was the STP sticker. You know, you'd go up to the local gas station and be like, 'You guys got any stickers?' And, you know, they always inevitably had an STP sticker, and that was just the coolest sticker to have." And I said to Scott, "We need to utilize those letters, because people will call us STP. And we did. We immediately called Robert and Eric, and, like, everybody started throwing names, you know, that began with the letters S, T, and P. And lo and behold, you know, over, I think it was, what do you think, Robert, about an hour, I think it came about that fast, you know, Stone Temple Pilots was derived from that.
Now, let me ask you about remastering. I mean, we all know that what the term is, I guess, but what actually happens when you take these tracks and you remaster them?
You know, I'm not a big fan of it, quite honestly, because, you know, look, man, we spend a lot of time and effort and the expertise and you know, amazing ears of the great Brendan O'Brien. And, like, you want us to change it? It's like, why don't you just go paint a mustache on the Mona Lisa, you know? So I'm not a big fan of remastering. And we actually, it took us about three cracks to remaster this record, because we were getting it back. It was either too hot. There was too much mids put in it. Not, you know, it's just, you know, so we definitely were very sparing on the remastering process of this. We pumped a little bit of mids into it and a little bit of low end. And, we think it sounds pretty nice.
What songs, what are some of your favorite songs on this? And, give me a good anecdote about it.
Well, I think it's the extremes for me. I think going from Creep to a song like Piece of Pie, I think there is a big emotional difference there. I always think of Creep when I think of Scott, because he was so excited about singing that song and what we accomplished and what we achieved with that song. Scott grew up as a big fan of country music, so we just wanted to make the most complete, fulfilling sounding record as possible, and that's always kind of what we always stuck by with all our records. I think first off, writing the best songs we could write. I think that's the main focus there. And I think, looking back at this as a whole, I think it's a nice journey as a record, you know?
Definitely. There's a new unreleased song that I guess you wrote for the intention of being on another record, but you put out on this special edition. Can you tell us about Only Dying?
Well, it actually wasn't written for any purpose other than we just demoed it, and then there was talk of possibly it being on the Crow soundtrack. And it just didn't make it. It never really went farther than the demo of what you're hearing on the CD2, you know?
Some other things that happened around this time and some things, I guess, that are included on the set are from the MTV Unplugged, which I think I was at. I could be completely wrong, but I think I was there. Where was that filmed?
Oh, my goodness. Do you remember where that was?
Yeah,
was the MTV Studios?
Yeah, I think it was the MTV Studios that they had back then. It was so long ago.
Was it in New York or L.A.?
It was New York.
Yeah, it was New York. We were so nervous.
I was going to say, were you nervous? Because that, you know, that was like the shining thing for any band to do. You know, it helped to, you know, explode careers. You know, look at Nirvana, for example, right?
You know what? Yeah, when you get one crack at something, it's just like, you know, late night TV. That just, boy, I lose some sleep over that. It's just like, all right, you got one crack, and here we go. You better get it right. Kind of harkens back to those early jazz records, man. You got one crack here. You hit a clam, you got to live with it.
That's true.
Yeah.
Now, let's see. I do a cover song show, and I know you have the cover of Bowie's Andy Warhol. I'm assuming Scott picked that one out, yes?
I think he did, didn't he? Did he pick that one out?
I think so,
sounds
yeah.
like something he would want to yeah. sing anyway, but...
Yeah, great song, beautiful song.
So, is there a little story you can tell me about that?
Well, it's funny because you know, three bands went in to do MTV Unplugged and all picked a David Bowie song.
That is really weird.
Yeah.
So Nirvana did. What did they do?
The Man Who Stole the World.
So, okay, so yeah. they were all filmed like back to back. Nirvana was like the night after us or night before us or something. But
what did Duran Duran do?
I'm not sure, man. I think they did a Bowie song too.
They did, but I don't know what song they did.
I don't know, but
China
of course,
Girl, maybe?
None of us, by any means, contacted one another. But it sure was weird that three consecutive bands went in and each did a Bowie cover. I mean, it's just a testament to. To Mr. Bowie, you know?
Definitely. Now, there have been some rumors swirling around that perhaps you guys have finally found a singer.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, tell me.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Yeah, we've been busy. We've been busy for the last year, just spending a lot of time with one another. And, you know, it goes, you know, at 56 years old, it's just goes beyond just writing and playing music together. You know, I just don't have time anymore for jive. Mm-hmm. And this is a person that, like, you know, well, first of all, are they going to enjoy being around me? You know, am I going to enjoy being around them? Is this a person that I would allow be by my family? Mm-hmm. You know, is this a person that can take STP to new places sonically and do it with grace and courage? So, you know, that's no small task. And Robert, Eric, and I knew we were asking for a lot, and we knew that we may never find the person. But we are very pleased where things are at. And like I said, we've spent, Robert, we think well over a year, pretty much a year with someone. And it's been a beautiful experience.
Can we say his first name starts with a J?
I don't know.
We're gonna plead the fifth on that. And
okay, well, you're right. Jeremiah was a bullfrog.
I knew you wouldn't tell me yet. Damn it. Damn you.
Speaking of Jay, we were thinking of changing the name of the bands into getting like a crossover if we wanted to hit the Latino market. So we were thinking of being the Wanderers. J-U-A-N-D-E-R-E-R. The Wanderers.
On that note, well, thank you, boys. Thank you so much. All the best with everything. Looking forward to the new music and whenever we'll see you again on the road. And you know, all my best.
Always great talking with you.
Hope to see you soon.
More episodes of Hard Drive DL at harddriveradio.com. Download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app and keep listening.